Well, now, we've been discussing this morning about proof and evidence and things of that nature. And in discussing it, it seems that you've brought up the point, and George Van Tassel has brought up the point, that you are not interested in proving anything. You want to tell the story when you have the opportunity, and it certainly has proven, to me at least, that you're interested in telling the story. You have lectured in different parts of the country, and you've written a few books, and George has done the same thing. I was just wondering, and in fact, I'd like to ask the question of George Van Tassel. George, if you're not interested in proving anything, and this is certainly your right, don't you feel that indirectly, in giving the lectures and writing the books and conducting the Interplanetary Convention each year, that indirectly it suggests to the listeners, whether they're listening to you give a lecture or whether they are reading one of your books, that basically you are trying to tell the American public that there are saucers landing on this planet and that people are arriving here from other planets and that they're here to do us good?
Definitely. We're trying to tell people some facts that are being withheld from the people.
I think you could put it this way. I can see the controversy is going to develop. If the city engineer goes out into the park, into the city park, and puts a drinking fountain out there, he's not particularly concerned whether any individual drinks from that fountain or not. It is his job to make that water available. If anyone wants to drink from it, why, they can. And if they don't, why, there's no compulsion whatever for them to do so.
Well, let me get back with George a moment. And this is not on personalities, George, because you've been on the program before and you've been with me a couple of times this trip, and I've had the pleasure of visiting with you out in California. Don't you feel that when we talk, or rather when you tell us about a rejuvenating machine and tell us about telepathic communications and these other machines, these electronic instruments that you have knowledge of, and you discuss it, do you think that it's wrong for people to want to question you and get more information about it?
No, I don't object to anybody questioning me or coming and finding out anything that we are ready to release.
Well, of course, unfortunately, not all of us are in a position financially and as far as time is concerned to take a trip out to California. I was one of the more fortunate ones. And
well, that's true enough, John. I have one project going in Detroit that I turned over to a man there who, because in my opinion, he's one of the few people in the United States qualified in our scientific field to handle a job.
Can you tell us something about this project?
Yes, it's a conoscope. It's what the space people call a conoscope. It's
what
a
is
device.
This?
We have many of them today, which are really replicas or duplicates or counterfeits of the real thing. The conoscope is counterfeited today in what we call a crystal ball. The original conoscope is made up in such a manner that the tuning of it is controlled by the thought of the individual looking into it.
Does it look like a crystal
it
ball?
It looks like a crystal ball when it's finished.
When it's finished?
When it's finished. Mm-hmm. This man who happens to be conducting this particular research and making this these parts that go into this thing, because they aren't just one ball, there are many parts. And the axis of these particular crystals have to be in relative directions to form three planes. And there's also three of the primary colors of that go in the three planes. And this thing will reproduce, by thinking into it, it'll reproduce whatever you desire to see.
Red, black, and
it'll
green.
It'll produce in full color and in motion, just like a motion picture.
And what will it do for us?
If you wanted to see your mother, say, in Nebraska or someplace, mm-hmm. you could look in it and think of your mother and you would see her in full motion, full color. This is one of the devices they carry around their pockets. It's a thing they developed thousands of years ago, and the one
thousands
that,
of years ago they developed it.
Well, they've had it for long enough so that they had them before they built the Great Pyramid. The predictions made by Nostradamus were the result of his acquiring one of the few true chronoscopes that were lost on this planet around the Great Pyramid.
Does he mention it in his book?
No, he doesn't. Without the necessity of assembling tubes and scopes and so forth, you could transmit from one of these crystals to any other crystal that were tuned to it. And use it that way as a television device.
I think you have a question here,
Hans. Not so much a question as just a very slight comment. You know, I can't help again but being impressed by the similarity of what you're describing with some things that we find in this science fiction.
Well, that's true.
What you're describing here, for example, is very similar to what a story by Richard Shaver, which appeared in, obviously not in our magazine, but in one of our competing magazines. Practically, not word for word, but symbol for symbol. It's very interesting.
It was also described by H.G. Wells in his book of short stories and called The Crystal Age.
Is it possible that he was familiar with the chronoscopes then?
It's very possible that he was given the telepathic information to write that article. The instrument itself is under construction. It requires a terrific amount of accuracy. And this man who is doing the work is fully qualified, and he can produce anything in the way of crystals.
Who establishes his qualification?
Well, the fact that he makes precision bearings and imitation precious stones for the United States government should be sufficient qualification. Mm-hmm. He has ever since World War II. Mm-hmm. That's his business.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if I could ask one question, if I might, Mr. Bill Tassel. I know certainly you wouldn't want to give your name out over the air, but would you mind writing it in a sheet of paper with his address and giving it to Long John? I don't want to see it.
What good would it do for me to give it to Long John?
Well, I think possibly John might be interested, as a disinterested person or skeptic.
I haven't got his address on me, and I don't know it by memory. I know that I have too many places and too many people. I have to keep this all in paper.
Well, this is sort of unusual, this chronoscope, isn't it? It would seem to me that it makes a great impression.
I don't think it's unusual. I think it's something that we would have had a long time ago if we quit trying to blow each other up and devoted our science to constructive things.
But ask John a question. John, are you out the Yucca Valley? Were you so fortunate as to watch any of the rejuvenation processes, our blizzards or the like?
No, during the time that I was in Yucca Valley, California, in all fairness to George Van Tassel, George was extremely busy out there. We had some 7,000 or 8,000 people on Saturday and a like a number on Sunday. It was the 11th and 12th of May. That, very frankly, I only had the opportunity of talking to George for a period of maybe 15 or 20 minutes. It should be obvious to anybody who listened to the program, that is the tapes when I came back, that I had no interview with George Van Tassel. He did not even have the time to spare to permit me to do an interview with George.
I think prior to the time you went out there, John, I believe Howard Menger had been there. And
yes, he was there, I think, a couple of months prior to the convention.
On the night of the, I won't mention the initials, a certain program when Howard was here, I have little notes from him. I have it in my briefcase now where he wrote to me and said that this rejuvenation machine building hadn't even been started yet.
Right.
And coming from Howard, well, I think earlier, if I recall correctly, a statement had been made that it hadn't been started.
Oh, no.
What's your recollection, John?
I showed John the blueprints here night before last.
No, I'm talking about the fall.
Evidently, I am confused at this point. In all fairness to George, I don't have any tapes of the show. I was under the impression that George had made the statement that there were two brain specialists with him in the desert at the time that they conducted this experiment with the lizard with the crushed head. And also, I was under the impression that the foundation for this building had been constructed. I could be wrong.
John, can I ask?
Yes,
I remember Howard writing the note and passing it to you. I can confirm that.
I have it.
Well, there isn't any building there. There isn't any question about whether Howard said it or who said it. There isn't any building there because we haven't started it yet.
What buildings are there?
Well, there's two buildings. One was required by the county because the research laboratory cannot contain any metal in its structure. Therefore, in order to have toilet facilities for sanitary conditions, the county Building and Safety Commission required that we put up a different building for the sanitary facilities. So that building is up, and the observatory is up. Now, the observatory is only temporary in the fact that the dome and the 10-inch reflector telescope on the top of it are only temporary. They're just put up there until we get the radio telescope that will mount on that building, mm-hmm. on that track.
I saw, pardon me a moment, Jules. As you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I did see some papers that were rather impressive, and I am led to believe, according to these papers, which had all the seals and all those sort of things on it, that George Van Tassel and his wife donated some 10 acres. Is that the correct amount? 10 acres of property to the College of Universal Wisdom.
Yeah.
I saw these papers. Now, I'm not an attorney.
If I understand, Mr. Van Tassel and Mrs. Van Tassel are trustees of the proceedings of the College of Universal Wisdom.
Four other people.
And I understand that according to Mr. Van Tassel, he is the person who signs the checks.
That's right.
Who endorses the checks. In other words, the financial structure of this organization is within his hands. I heard him say further, I believe, in Wednesday morning, that the money had to be properly applied, for example, for transportation. Now, I'm going to ask you this question. If you don't want to answer it, Mr. Van Tassel, I won't press you.
Mm-hmm.
On your transportation, what does that take in that the College of the Universal Wisdom pays for? Your transportation?
That takes in anything in which any of our research or flying saucers are discussed, or any of the research that I have to go around the country on, because I have some more things being made in other places besides Detroit. It takes in anything that, in other words, some of our contributions are given string free. There's no specified use for it by the donor.
So I'm going to ask you one simple question.
We use it any way we wish, providing it's used for college work.
Yes. Now, then I assume that your trip east would be paid out of the transportation fund of the college tonight, right?
It could be.
Well,
in this case, it didn't happen to be, but it could be.
It could be. I see. And also, understand, this is solely through contributions that the bank account of the college is built up.
That's right.
Now, at some occasions, I assume, then, your transportation is paid by the college.
That's right.
May I ask you, sir, and I understand tonight you had approximately 1,500 persons at the lecture paying, I believe, $1 or $1.50 apiece. You turn this money over to the College of Proceedings of the University?
My share of that money, Dan will get half of it naturally, and my share of it will be turned into the college, because everything I make of my own money, whether it be there or any way that I may make money, is turned over directly to the college. I have no individual private money of my own.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said there are only contributions made up the bank account.
That's right. And that is a contribution. I contribute everything I make to the college.
In all fairness to George, this was not tonight, this was not an admission fee. This was a donation.
Could you get in if you didn't donate?
Plenty of them did.
It was marked that way, Jules.
I wasn't there, of course, but from what I...
In fact, the whole balcony...
I personally observed at least 75 people and went in without paying.
Well, I understand that according to report, the people who were there, they had to pony up the money before they got inside.
No,
I think there's some people here now who are nodding in the corner.
You can't get out of the elevator without being inside.
Well, the idea of admission, but I'm getting at is this. I understood from contributions, it didn't refer to admissions. But assuming that in any event, the money that goes in, you are the man who signs the checks.
That's right.
You are the man who deposits.
As the head of the organization, I have to know where the money goes.
And there's no other trustees who, with you, signs the check.
No. They all trust me completely.
I see. And do by any chance... Do you have any financial statements you issue to the contributors?
Yes, we do. And we make a statement every 3 or 4 months as to what progress we made on the buildings or...
No, I meant financially, sir.
We don't, we don't make a financial statement because it isn't required that we make a financial statement.
Under California law?
No.
Maybe
not in a non-profit organization.
I know, I have the college annual here, or about 4 years of reports, or 3 years. I've been looking very closely through here to find one statement as to how much money you've received, how much money you've put out.
Anybody that wants to examine that bank account can examine. I don't care who they are.
Well, here's a message from Roger again. And you know Roger smokes Cavalier cigarettes.
One telegram here, and you may want to comment on it, Dan Fry. The message is, if Dan Fry is so well-trained
and an expert, why is he appearing on such a program as Van Tassel? Well, I would like to say to Mrs. Frank Dillon, who sent the telegram, that the program is Long John. These are my guests this morning. However, I think that she's suggesting, rather she's trying to imply that you're appearing on the program with Van Tassel.
Well, of course, the answer to that's very simple, Long John. If I am required to defend myself for being here, then so are you and so is everyone else who is on the program. Basically, I am here to see if I can learn something. I haven't formulated any opinions during all the discussion that's going on here as yet because I haven't seen enough data come in on which a reasonable opinion could be formed. I'm still completely open-minded, and I hope that before the end of the program, we will actually get some data before that.
Well, but you are familiar with George Van Tassel's method of communicating with people from other planets.
Oh, yes.
And because you've had a similar experience, you possibly feel that he evidently has the same experience. Is that right?
Well, I see no reason to disbelieve it. Mm-hmm.
Fine. All right.
Since I am the one who is the detrimental aspect of this particular
well,
program...
Well, now, this is not my opinion, George. So.
Yeah, I would like to comment on it, though, because it appears to indicate that Dan shouldn't be associating with such a character as me if he is an expert. Well, I don't normally associate with experts because most of them I've found don't know what they're talking about. But I just want to, in front of Long John here, show you something... John, just for this woman's benefit, not for the rest of the listeners, because they don't care. But this is a deputy sheriff's badge. It's a badge in San Bernardino County. In order to get this badge and the card that goes with it, which is here, you have to pass through every security in the nation. You have to be cleared of being any potential communist or anything like that. This is an Airman's Identification Card issued by the Civil Aeronautics Administration. This is a pilot, a airframe and power plant mechanics ticket also issued by them, and a state driver's license.
Well, you can take hands with me. I'm a deputy sheriff of Essex County.
Oh,
you haven't cleared, John, by every national agency?
You haven't seen anything yet. I want to really show this woman why Dan is associated.
And I'm equally as proud of my badge, too.
You know,
I don't mean
this
to...
This is
the
real reason Dan associates with me. Because I'm also an ordained minister.
John, I was just going to ask you, in getting a deputy sheriff's badge in the state of New Jersey, are there any qualifications or security clearance?
Well, I sincerely hope that there are, but I was presented with a badge, and I'm very grateful that I have the badge and the card.
I know
I'm very proud of it.
In New York, about 10 or 12 years back, a few friends of mine wanted a badge. I made 2 phone calls. The FBI, the police department, the treasury department, and no one else checked on them. They just got a badge, period.
Well, if you're asking me if they've checked on me, frankly, I don't know.
But I
really don't know.
It's very hard for me to comprehend how every security facility in the nation would check on a deputy sheriff in San Bernardino County, is it, in California?
San Bernardino, isn't
it?
All I know, Jules, is that's what they told me at the sheriff's office when I... took the examination and the requirements that I had to fulfill was that you couldn't possibly be a peace officer Under the national emergency laws, unless you were cleared by all securities of the nation.
Or times of...
I should also admit, then, in all fairness, evidently your badge is entirely different from mine because, frankly, I didn't appear any place. In other words, possibly mine is just an honorary badge. I really don't know.
John, I'd like... I don't know if George would object... But I've been interested. I've read certain portions of the proceedings, and I'd like to ask him a few questions about it. But before I do, I would like to ask a favor of you, John. In deference to your wishes, and I think to George's request, he doesn't want to discuss the H.O. story.
That's out.
Yes, right. But I would like, at a later opportunity, to reply to some of the statements he made about me on the air and in the proceedings. And I would like to state now that I would not like it to be said that I make it in George's absence, because if he were willing, I'd be very happy to make them tonight. But the question, do I make myself clear there?
Well, I'll tell you what, George, we want to get into the discussion, and certainly if you have any questions to ask in reference to proceedings, you may do so.
Yes.
Now, look, let me ask you this. In all fairness to you, George is here. And if you're going to say that George said this or something like that, George is here, and he knows what he said. Do you think that you could give us this opinion of what has been said about you? Do you think we could wrap this up in, say, 3 or 4 minutes?
I frankly don't know. He has stated, I just want to bring a couple of things, referring to me. I'm going to read one paragraph, John.
Please do.
The confessions of this faker, that's me, he said.
You're reading from proceedings dated June?
I'm reading from the proceedings dated April, May, 1957. It's a long article. The confessions of this faker only reveals a sadistic desire to hurt others. This is proven by the attack upon someone 3,000 miles away at the instigation of the forces of Satan or the physical hush-hush group of the military. Have you decided yet, George, whether I'm employed...
You're referred to as a faker in that paragraph.
Yes,
is that right?
But yeah, that's... Oh, yes. I've been about a dozen times here.
Well,
this is read over the air. But I'd like
faker.
To find out this. My question is, have I done this at the instigation of Satan or the hush-hush group of the military? Have you found out yet?
Well, you certainly didn't do it at the instigation of the people of the Golden Rule.
Oh, well, I think very well. My whole motive in being here is based upon the Golden Rule. I'd like you to do unto others as I'd like them to do to me.
Then you should have come and found out what you're talking
about. The question
is
this, Mr. Van Tassel. You say I did it at the instigation of the forces of Satan, I repeat, or the physical... hush-hush group of the military.
Well, the reason
now, will you explain that?
The reason I separated those two forces is because the military forces of the hush-hush group are physical people and physical bodies operating on the earth. The forces of Satan are destructive influences that cause people to do things that they are not responsible for, in a sense, because they are being directed or instigated through some mental process of control to do those things.
Well, do you think, have you decided if I am being instigated by the military or Satan?
I didn't say that you were directed by either of them.
May I read it again?
All right.
This is proven by its attack upon someone 3,000 miles away at the instigation of the forces of Satan or the physical hush-hush group of the military. I think that's very definite. Could you explain it now?
Well, it is fairly definite, and you would have to make the decision as to what your motive is or who is influencing you.
No, but you're making the accusation. I'm not sure.
All I can say is that you certainly haven't done it by the forces of love or the Golden Rule.
No, you're saying two specific things, one or the other, the forces of Satan or the hush-hush group of the military.
Well, I would have mentioned two if I'd only known one. I don't know, or I wouldn't have suggested to you.
I mean, you're sure it's one or the other?
No, I didn't say that. There could be other reasons.
Oh, well, maybe I missed it.
May I just ask this question a moment? I think when you showed me those cards there, the various organizations that you're associated with, You also mentioned that you're an ordained minister. You did show me
that's
the card,
right.
But
mm-hmm.
I didn't read it, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
What is the church, George?
It's the Christ Brotherhood Church.
And when were you ordained?
Just this year.
This year.
Mm-hmm.
Fine.
I wonder, as long as George brought up the subject up, if you could explain what are the requirements for a minister being ordained in the state of California.
I haven't the faintest idea what the requirements are.
You mean you just get ordained?
Normally, in the process of ordaining ministers or receiving doctor's degrees in this country, anywhere, it seems to be that it's possible to be appointed or ordained to anything, providing somebody connected with that particular thing chooses to ordain you.
Well, I understand. Now, one thing, I was brought up, by the way, to be a minister until I fell into the forces of Satan. or the military. But my understanding was that you had to appear before a board before you were ordained in most of the churches.
Well, that's not going to go into the processes of ordination because I don't frankly know what they are.
I mean,
I know that the card was sent to me on the basis of the fact that the group that ordained me felt that I was teaching the Word of God. That's the reason it was done. That's what they told me.
All right. I think that's the answer to that question. I just thought, in all fairness, that the fact that George Van Tassel is an ordained minister, that possibly some of our listeners would be interested in knowing the name of the church that he's associated with. All right. Now, did you want to get into something about proceedings?
Yeah, I think Hans wanted to say
yes,
something.
Go ahead.
I have a couple of points I wanted to ask about. In some cases, based upon this, the Bulletin of Civilian Software Intelligence.
CSI.
Yes, CSI, who, by the way, described you, George, as a...
what is the date of this particular bulletin?
The particular bulletin I'm referring to is dated December 15, 1956.
I think this is the one that you referred to before,
that
George said he hadn't had the
that
opportunity
is the one
of reading
I referred
it.
To earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And, but incidentally, while, of course, they do say one or two slightly critical things about you.
Mm-hmm. What did they say?
They refer to you, I want to point out to you that they refer to you as a handsome, broad-faced, fair-haired man in his early 40s with a pleasant, deep voice and an easygoing manner of speech, something which I completely agree with them on the basis of this first meeting.
Well, we're in agreement on one thing this morning anyway.
Yeah, I have two hairs.
I want to find... You don't have three eyes.
I have two hairs.
You have two hands? You sound like some people who escaped from the pages of my magazine. by the way, yes, I'm right. I do have one or two points, and I would like to make them before the break, because I am afraid I will have to leave soon after that. I have to be at the office at a reasonably decent hour in the morning, you know. I have a couple of questions, some of them I've been accumulating over a period of time, and I also have, with John's indulgence, I want to say this one thing, that I have a rather lengthy article on contact cases coming out in a early issue of Fantastic Universe, which I think is quite likely to interest you and others. And I want to say that I'll be delighted to send you advance copies of it in case you would like to comment on it.
Okay.
Now, I have two or three questions. One is this. You mentioned Deputy Sheriff's badge.
Mm-hmm.
Page 7, John. You mentioned Deputy Sheriff's badge. Now, I don't deny... I don't mean to cast disparagement upon the Deputy Sheriff's badge in either San Bernardino County in California or elsewhere, but I do think you must have read about instances where these badges were issued to people who had some, let us say, some standing in the community, were reasonably well known, but who were not necessarily dedicated person.
That's right.
I can think of one man. I can think of... Oh, I'm not suggesting that it isn't so in your case, but I can think of one man, for example, in Arizona, who was a business partner of the previous Attorney General of the state of Arizona, who is no longer either an Attorney General or a lawyer. This gentleman is committed a few business dealings, and in the course of which he got the deputy sheriff's badge. I understand that way.
Well,
one thing came up, yes?
Let me tell you that this badge is not an honorary conferment. As John said, he probably has an honorary badge.
It's very possible.
This badge is committed under bond. I'm a bonded deputy, the same as any other deputy.
You said that you were checked by federal and other agencies.
I said that they told me that my application or my information had to be confirmed by other branches of security.
When you say they, George,
I mean the sheriff's office.
I think I could point out at this point that requires only a telephone call to be checked by all of these security agencies, since all of the information that one has is available to all of them. You could be quite thoroughly checked by FBI or by security in about 15 or 20 minutes by a single phone call.
In other words, by just finding out whether there is any information about the individual in their files, right?
After the absence of a criminal record.
To one agency?
Not only that, if a person has ever worked in any security, in any aircraft plant, in any plant that is in any way under security, there is a complete dossier on that individual which is maintained.
Mm-hmm. Hans, do you want to continue, please?
I have two or three other points. I understand that you felt that there has been some suggestion in an article in Fantastic Universe implying that... not in Fantastic Universe, but in a Daily News article some time ago, implying that interest in ufology might make you suspect.
No, I since read that, and I want to tell John that where I read it was in Search magazine. Uh-huh. I didn't read the article direct, but Palmer reprinted the article, and I assume he reprinted it rightly.
Uh-huh.
And I did happen to get a copy of that Search magazine today, and John was right. He was referring to the people in the ships rather
That's
than
right.
the contacts.
Oh, yeah. Because Ben Gross has never at any time implied that
he
would
be... Oh, no, I didn't say Ben implied.
No, no, because I wanted to...
I said it appeared in his column.
...just on that point, among other, because I'm sure that Mr. Gross or anybody else...
I know Ben has been out to that place.
...meant to imply that, you see. And that there was nothing personal... Just as there's nothing personal in any questions I may ask you, I'm sure there's nothing personal in any point that he may make. In this civilian social intelligence bulletin, there's a reference to the two eminent brain surgeons who are not otherwise identified, page 7, about one third of the way down.
Mm-hmm, I see.
Yeah. They are apparently told you that they had examined a brain. Here it is stated of a little man from Scully's saucer, specifically, and that from the appearance of these brains, it could be calculated that a little man was several hundred years old. Do you have any further comment on that?
Yes.
Is this
but,
an accurate?
What I'm wondering is
an accurate,
what I'm trying to find out is who signed this article. Who wrote this article?
I think it's
that's the thing in my publication.
This civilian saucer intelligence bulletin is written by the directors of the organization.
How many directors and who?
Two of them. One is Lex Nevin, and the other gentleman is Ted Blocher.
Well, this seems to be an article about George Van Tassel and his wonderful rejuvenation machine. It sounds like Tom Swift and his airplane, the way they titled it.
May I just make this one comment, though? I do know the two gentlemen happen to be in the studio here this evening.
That's wonderful.
No, the reason I say this, George, is that they based this article on tapes that they made of the party line.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I can say is that either they heard the tapes wrong or something, because there was no mention of Silas Newton on the tapes that I know of. They brought that in here.
I can ask.
And they also stated, which originated with a convicted swindler, Silas Newton. I'll inform you people right now In case you're listening back there, that Silas Newton was not convicted. You have made a statement of libel here against him, which he could sue you for. You better find out what you're talking about when you print things in the paper.
Might I state this, that then True Magazine is guilty of libel.
He has a million-dollar lawsuit hanging over their head right now.
They gave very specific dates.
May I ask you, if this is a direct quote, may I continue, rather?
May I interrupt just one moment, please?
Yeah.
I would like to announce that any of the statements made by any of my guests this morning are not necessarily the opinions of the management of WOR, the Mutual Network, any of their affiliates, or yours truly, L.J. Continue, huh?
Yeah. May I continue? Is this a accurate quote in this reference to the statement? They quote you as saying that you know how to build saucer motors, which I grant you may be a generalization.
Yes,
quote,
I do.
Any good mechanic can build them. They use no fuel. The administration is suppressing the truth because of the effect it would have on the oil companies.
Not on the oil companies, on the economy.
Quote. Huh?
Not on the oil companies, on the economy.
On the economy as a whole, rather than
Let me start up here. I've never seen this article. I'm surprised people write these things about me and they never send me a copy of it. In fact, I never get this bulletin at all.
Yeah, but could you possibly answer, because, was this not an accurate quote then?
Not on the oil companies, no. On the oil companies directly, yes, but on the economy, that is the thing that they...
Why would the revelation of the method used...
Because it's a fuelless motor.
Motor power, let us say. Why would that affect the American economy rather than only a segment of it?
It would affect all economies.
All economies?
Yes.
How?
Because it is a fuelless motor. It doesn't require fuel.
But how would that affect our entire economy?
Well, the whole economy is based on power. Power is the source of all economy. Without transportation, communication, or power, there is no economy. There's no basis for economy.
Mm-hmm.
That is the basis of all economy.
Is it correct that you have described the planets as self-luminous?
Yes. Yes.
What is your authority for that?
Venus is self-luminous because of the field it generates around it. The field, the light you see that looks like a star, is partly reflected light, but they also generate a field which is luminous around the planet. The planet itself isn't self illuminated, but the field it generates is illuminated by the fact that the planet generates it.
Let me quote one paragraph from page 8, the second paragraph from page 8.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to pull things out of context, and I think you appreciate the fact that I'm doing it only because of lack of time, and I'm sure you'll have every opportunity to discuss the article itself at greater length later in the...
Well, anyway, George has a copy, so
I'd like to comment on this article myself.
Yeah, but I would like to comment on the ask if the second paragraph is substantially true, a true copy, shall we say, a true rendition of what you say. Quote, however, the most significant tale now being told by Van Tassel... I'm sure that told by Van Tassel is the story of the longevity machine. Mm-hmm. It seems that it is by no means a machine, underlined, using time field, that the planet people are able to live so many centuries without aging. In parentheses, Methuselah, who was a Venusian, had one of these machines, but since it gradually wore out, his descendants lived shorter lives than he did. You don't believe this? The sort of people who say it, so. End of parenthesis. Van Tassel knows how to build this machine, and he knows the theory of its operation. As we age, the electron orbits in our atoms become eccentric, and this machine rejuvenates us by restoring them to circularity. In parenthesis, as anyone with a smattering of chemistry or physics will recognize, this is Aaron Balderdash.
This whole article is Aaron Balderdash.
I interjected, I quoted both the editorial comments as well as the actual and presumed direct quote. But are the direct quotes correctly attributed to you?
Mm-hmm.
Are they?
These are not anything here right. No, nothing here is a...
Have you referred to Methuselah as a Venusian?
No, I never referred to any such a thing. This is put in here with a vein of ridicule. This is all written in a vein of ridicule. This whole thing is written in a vein of ridicule. Back here it says the Adamski story is true, and then in quotes it says anyone who has studied it knows it must be false.
It quotes you.
Look, I talked to an Air Force Major General who personally told me he had witnessed the motion pictures taken from an airplane circling over Adamski's contact of the entire contact.
Could you give us his name, please, or write it down?
No, I won't give you his name.
Could you give it to John?
To use his name.
Can you ever give a name and address, Mr. Van Chester?
Certainly,
I have that. I'm afraid I have to...
Let me go over this article and let me say something.
Yes, but let me finish first.
Go ahead, Hans, please.
After all, I'm being attacked on the paper by you and by somebody else, and everybody
Mr.
on the
Van
attack
Tassel.
Side gets
Mr.
The,
Mr. Van Tassel,
the time.
They will not. Mr. Van Tassel, may I say one thing, make one thing very clear?
Mm-hmm.
I'm here. I happen to be rather interested in this field. I'm interested in publishing material dealing with this field. I am perfectly prepared, as I said earlier this evening or this morning, whatever it is, to publish anything at all on this subject, but I must be reasonably convinced as a research person, as a research worker, and as a person of some objectivity, that there is some substance of proof. And with all due deference to your undoubted sincerity, with all due deference to your undoubted anxiety to serve humanity, I must say this, and I say this quite deliberately without in any way attempting to be personal, that I am not convinced. I am not convinced, I am a little confused by some of the things that you are not only credited with saying, but that you have said even here tonight.
I should think you would be confused. You've been reading this article.
I've been reading quite a number of
things. This article would confuse anybody. I can show you deliberate misstatements.
Mr. Van Tassel.
It says Kehoe spoke at the 1956 convention, and Kehoe and Ruppelt, neither one were there. It says both of them spoke there.
Mr. Van Tassel.
These statements are absolute false.
Mr. Van Tassel. May I
confuse anybody?
I should explain just one thing. I have been in research work. I am accustomed to analyzing and evaluating all sorts of contradictory statements and reports.
Yeah.
I do not accept any one statement necessarily without checking and double-checking.
Mm-hmm.
I grant you that these people are perhaps not as a little less than charitable on the subject of your alleged or actual experiences,
mm-hmm.
but I have found, on the whole, and I say this quite deliberately, I have found them to be factual and unemotional and quite objective in the report of UFO sightings and UFO events.
You mean the people
where they may depart from you in pure objectivity is in their reaction to alleged or only partially proven contact cases. And there is where I frankly join them in expressing a certain amount of skepticism without, however, being necessarily saying that you ain't this or you ain't that, you know.
May I just interrupt a moment? I think that George Van Tassel brought up a point here that there was a misstatement in the December 15th edition of the Civilian Saucer Intelligence publication. And on May 1st, that is the bulletin that I have in front of me now, dated May 1st, 1957, they have made a correction, and they make this statement here. Page 6, we were in error in stating that Kehoe spoke at Van Tassel's space convention. To his credit, Kehoe has never had and never will have any dealings with Van Tassel. This statement that Ruppelt appeared may likewise be erroneous.
To his credit, Kehoe has never had.
Yes,
did
but
Kehoe
none of
say that? Did Kehoe say that himself? I'll see him in Washington Saturday. I want to make sure.
In other words, they made a correction.
I have a lot of them, by the way, from NICAP, which includes me in it. Makes me an honorary consultant member, in fact. And he happens to be at the head of it. So I don't know which one of these articles are right, the one you printed or what he sent me. But what I'm getting at is this whole article is an attack. If this is based on your tapes, as you say, this article.
I didn't write the article.
No.
No, but, you see, there was also at Tiffany
and Temple. You see, here by implication again, this vicious thing says he has a background of 28 years in the aircraft industry, having worked in flying and flight test work for Douglas, Howard, Hughes, and Lockheed. Then in quotes again, see, implying to the people that I'm a crook, it might be interesting to check up on this history. Why didn't the people check up on the history before they wrote the article? That's what I can't figure out, because anybody is welcome to check into my history in the aircraft business. The FBI knows it completely. I was in on research and things during World War II, and they know me from here on back.
George, in all fairness to you and to everybody here this morning, you haven't had an opportunity of reading this. I wasn't familiar with that. We're way past our coffee break. I think we'll take a brief break at this time, and we'll be back if you fellas can gobble up those delicious sandwiches from Carnegie Delicatessen and Restaurant in about 15 minutes, and that's tough to do. Come on, John, with the party line. We're talking this morning with George Van Tassel, who operates Giant Rock Spaceport and Airport in California, and he has been the host at four annual spacecraft conventions. We have with us Dan Fry, the author of the book entitled The White Sands Incident. And in this book, he tells the story of a trip which he made in a flying saucer from a desert spot on the White Sands Proving Ground in New Mexico to New York City and back in a period of 32 minutes. We have with us Jules St. Germain, the attorney from Lynbrook, Long Island, and Ted Blocher, one of the directors of the Civilian Saucer Intelligence Groups in the city of New York. Not groups, but the group, right? All right, Ted?
Right.
Feeling proper? Right. Thank you. Prior to our coffee break, we were discussing George Van Tassel's rejuvenating machine and the conoscope. Is that the term that you use? To identify
yeah,
a conoscope.
Yeah, that's what they call it.
Mm-hmm. And before we get into the discussion, I would just like to read one more telegram. We have received a number of them. One in particular addressed to Long John and signed the listener. Jules is decidedly unpleasant. He operates with insinuation and an innuendo. This is not a trial. And that's in quotes.
I'm awfully sorry to be unpleasant to the listener. I'm trying to be very direct and avoid insinuations, but possibly because of my very definite and deep feelings on the matter, I'm letting my emotions run away with myself. But I don't want it to be a trial, John, but I think by questions and answers, questions with direct answers, we might get to the truth of this matter a little more rapidly.
All right, Ted Blocher, as one of the directors of Civilian Saucer Intelligence, you have published in the Civilian Saucer Intelligence Bulletin many statements that you allege were made by George Van Tassel. Is that true?
No, we don't allege that they were made. We state that they were made
mm-hmm.
at his previous lectures in New York City last fall and over your program.
Is that the lecture that was given at Pythian Temple?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, fine. Now, George, during the coffee break, I know that you were bothered with three or four phone calls, people calling in wanting to talk to you, that is, personal friends of yours, and you were trying to enjoy the good sandwiches from Carnegie Delicatessen and Restaurant and also the delicious coffee, so I don't know whether you had an opportunity to read that bulletin.
Well, I just glanced at it, John, and then I was looking at this CSI bulletin supposed to be a civilian saucer intelligence. I'm still looking for the intelligence, because they make statements without investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the title of another one is West Coast Contact Claimants Tell a Phony Sounding Tale.
Are they referring to you in that article?
No, they're not referring to me. They're referring to a man named Todd. Well, I happen to know that they didn't investigate this thing. There's evidence in this man's backyard where this gold ball came down, of the breaking of brush, as it was in Dan Fry's case, except in this case, many people saw the broken brush, and they also saw the sharp line of demarcation where the vegetation was burned by the field.
Two points, please.
What's that?
May I make 2 points?
Yeah.
Point one, broken branches is no indication of a saucer landing in my book. Point two is we did not investigate this case personally. We did not write it. This case was submitted to us by a person who did investigate at first hand and is written by her.
A member of your organization?
That's right, in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. George, supposing that we comment, instead of on the bulletin in its entirety, supposing we comment on some of the statements that they made about you that you don't agree with, I think that would give you an opportunity.
Well,
to
I'm not critical of the statements they make about me. It's the implications and insinuations which tend to lead people to believe something other than what is true. Because they said I operate a small airport at Giant Rock. Now, if they had ever come to Giant Rock, they would have found out that it is the largest private field airport in the world. In the California desert, it isn't a small airport. It has a runway 1,600 feet longer than the Navy base next door to it.
Point taken.
29 pounds.
Right. It's a tremendous airport.
It says he has a background of 28 years in the aircraft industry, having worked in flying and flight test work for Douglas, Howard Hughes, and Lockheed. And then in quotes, it says it might be interesting to check up on his history. Well, that was the thing they should have checked up on before they wrote the article. Because the history is there, everybody knows it, the government knows it, and everybody else.
Point
were you implying, Ted, in that comment that you doubted Mr. Van Tassel's statement about his background?
Not at all. I'm simply, we were simply stating there that it would be interesting to find out on his find out his background. However, this article is not written on your background, Mr. Van Tassel.
No.
It's written on the comments you made in your lectures and over Long John's show.
That's right.
However, the article does refer to his background. I think it would appear to me that there's a very plain insinuation there. I don't know whether my thought or opinions on it would coincide with anyone else.
I would
so
agree.
To me, it would give a very clear insinuation.
Of course, Mr. Van Tassel has stated that the government knows about him. I think I heard him say the other night he's been investigated by the FBI and various other government agencies.
Yeah.
My question to you, Mr. Van Tassel, is do you know what conclusion the FBI reached about you?
Yes, I do, but I'm not privileged to tell you.
You mean
that.
They've allowed you to see their confidential files?
I didn't say anything to that effect.
I said that I am not privileged by their request to tell you what they arrived at.
Well, are you telling me the FBI investigated you and
told
you the result of the investigation?
No, they didn't tell me the result of the investigation. They asked me not to reveal what they came out for primarily.
Oh, well, I mean, as far as the result of the investigation about you, you do not know what it is. Is that right?
No, except that by the reaction from the investigation, I know that they found nothing of anything that was out of order.
Well, that would be an assumption, right?
I think that's a fair assumption, inasmuch as the argument started over the fact that he was getting a deputy sheriff badge, and he did get the badge. I think this is the evidence that the investigation is reasonably satisfactory.
Oh, would you say the argument was an argument about Mr. Van Tassel getting him a deputy sheriff badge?
The question as to what length he had been investigated and what the results of that were. If he applied for a deputy sheriff badge and was investigated and was granted the badge, I think it's a fair assumption that the investigation is at least reasonably favorable. Also, if Mr. Van Tassel has ever worked in any aircraft plant, he has definitely been investigated by the FBI. And also here, the fact that he was employed is in itself a fairly conclusive proof that the investigation is satisfactory.
Well, I would only say this, and I think you brought it up, Mr. Fry, that the investigation can be made in about 10 or 15 minutes, and I assume the basis would be to check to see if there's a criminal record.
Not necessarily. This is true only if you are going to work for the first time. But if you're going to work for the first time for any aircraft plant, you must furnish yourself a complete dossier of your past history, going back at least to your birth, and usually going back into the lives of your parents. I'm familiar with this because I've been through the process many times.
I don't want to belabor the point. Just let me ask one question. Does anyone here know, in San Bernardino County in California, if that's what it is, precisely what investigation is made of their own knowledge, or don't we know?
Yes, I know, because the sheriff's office told me.
Well,
that you had to be approved by every agency of security or investigation.
Yeah, well, I'll drop a line, if I may. You would
certainly
mind
drop
to verify
a line.
That.
That's the
gentlemen. Let's get into the subject at hand. Would you like to discuss
it?
Goes
on to say here
that
I am also the impresario of annual spacecraft inventions at Giant Rock, and these are now tremendous affairs, attracting many thousands. And then it goes on to say that Ruppelt and Keogh were among the speakers in 56. Well, they retracted that statement in the next issue, which proves that they published something or were gullible to something, I don't know what.
Point,
to,
please.
Whatever it might have been, they had to retract the statement, which proved that they didn't investigate that either.
One of my favorite newspapers in the city of New York happens to be the New York Daily News, and I notice from time to time that they have a paragraph devoted to an apology, which is in the form of a correction.
That's right.
This can happen, I think, in any publication.
I haven't seen any retraction of the one in the Los Angeles Examiner, though. They said that Frank Scully and George Adams spoke at this year's convention, and neither one of them were there, except Frank Scully came in late that night and talked to me for a while.
I know,
He didn't talk with the people at the convention.
You want to make a point
there?
Yes,
I'd just like to cover the point that Mr. Van Tassel brought up about our mention of Keogh. We certainly were in error, and I think it can be traced right back to you, Mr. Van Tassel.
No, it can't.
Yes, this statement came from the Los Angeles Herald Express, and I can't give you the date right offhand because I don't...
It doesn't matter.
But it was issued by yourself prior to the spacecraft convention of last year and written in the past tense as if it had taken place already.
Oh, no. The only reference I made to the press about Keogh or Ruppelt, whom I know both of them, whether they want to admit knowing me or not. They admit it to my face.
Is there a doubt? Is there any reason why they should want to admit not knowing you?
They treat me very respectfully to my face. They always have, and talk like
what
I was.
What about behind your
colleague.
Back? Is there any evidence that they've been
nothing
using
except
an
what other people print. Other people print things, reference.
Such as? Can you give us any specific references?
We don't
quote Ruppelt or Keogh in any criticism of you.
In this retraction of this statement, in the next issue, you read yourself here the fact that he said he wouldn't be associated with me or something like
Mr.
that.
Mr. Van Tassel, this is our own editorial comment to which we are permitted.
Well, then didn't say it, but it was...
No,
like...
if you read that carefully, you'll see what we said. We said to his credit, and this is our own editorial.
Well, I think actually that this proves the point that this was not... Originally, it was stated that it was not anything that Keogh or Ruppelt said that was derogatory to Mr. Van Tassel. It was what people printed.
That's right.
May I
read the quote, please?
Yes, go ahead, John.
We were in error in stating that Keogh spoke at Van Tassel's space convention. To his credit, and they're referring to Keogh at the present in this particular instance, Keogh has never had and never will have any dealings with Van Tassel. Now, this is not a quote from Keogh. Is that right, Ted?
This is what Keogh told us when we spoke to him one time this spring before the publication of newsletter number 7. We asked him specifically if he had appeared because we found out after the newsletter number 6 had come out that we were in error.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to check on it. And Keogh said, no, he had never had any dealings with Mr. Van Tassel.
Yeah, but this says, and he never will have. That leaves a false impression, because never is a long time.
Well, you ask Mr. Major Keogh about that.
I'm going to Washington Saturday. I'll make it a point to see him.
Fine.
I think that you...
will be very interested
I don't want
to
mention
the results,
unless
by
you
the
want
way.
To. Would you like to mention on the air this morning what your purpose is in going to Washington, or would you rather not?
Yes, I'm familiar with it. I have no reason to hide it. I wrote to the president for an appointment for the 22nd at his convenience on that day.
You're referring to President Eisenhower.
That's right. The president is President Eisenhower.
Well,
and,
I mean,
there's no other president.
Yes, there are. There's President of General.
Well, I would have
president
said so
of
if it were something other
organization.
Than... But I so far have not received an answer from the White House, which leads me to believe that the way I wrote the letter let them know I would be there in Washington anyway, and probably upon a phone call will be fitted into his schedule sometime during that day.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the recent sickness and so forth, I suppose all their schedules were upset. So they certainly have had plenty of time to answer his or answer my request and tell me no if they were going to turn it down.
And they feel that you'll be in town. I mean, this is your feeling, that due to the fact they know that you'll be in Washington that day, that they'll possibly try to work you into
the
president's schedule.
I don't feel that I'm being brushed off or ignored. In the event that I am, I will certainly publish it to that effect.
Speaking of the president, Mr. Van Tassel, possibly my memory is wrong. Please correct me if it is. In one of the proceedings was a statement made that a certain fictional story, seemingly fictional story, about a space visitor visiting the president. Did you say that was true?
Did I what?
A certain story published in either American magazine or Cosmopolitan, I'm not sure, concerning a visit of a spaceman to the president. Did you say that it was not fiction, but the truth?
That's right.
You said at tonight's lecture that the president knows the inside story on the spacecraft and
definitely
has conversed with spacemen himself.
Definitely. The president.
You go on
knows,
record as
knows,
saying that.
That's right. I have said it in my lectures
fine
for years.
Okay. This
and
has been
and
mentioned.
Nobody has ever denied it.
If I may just comment on this, this statement has been made by five or six people who have appeared on the program. Of course, that does not necessarily mean that this is a true fact. It may be just something that they're assuming.
The
I
interesting
just
part
to be close enough to where he was at the time he came to Palm Springs and know what was going on.
Is this the hangar number 5 story?
I don't
generally
know what hangar numbers involved. I've heard 15 hangar numbers.
I know, it changes each time.
I
but
know
can
that
you
the
tell
press
us about
was
that
lined
a little
up
bit
for miles in front of Edwards Air Force Base trying to find out what was going on, and the personnel coming back off of furloughs had their furloughs extended and were not permitted to even come back on the base.
When was the date of this, Mr. Van Tassel?
I don't know the exact date.
You were out there?
It was at the time the president flew to Palm Springs a couple of years ago.
But you don't know the date?
Not exactly, no. I would have to look it up.
This has been brought up on the program before, not only by Mr. Van Tassel, but by other guests.
The interesting part would be who started the story and who copied it. Now, for instance, when Howard Menzer is on the air, I noticed that he says many, many things that Mr. Van Tassel said originally. I think Mr. Van Tassel may deserve the credit, if I may use that word in quotations, for starting these stories. But the story that appeared in the magazine, I don't know if you remember which one, Mr. Van Tassel, I happened to look it up because I noticed in the proceedings you said it was not fiction, but true.
That's right.
Do you remember what magazine this was offhand?
The American magazine.
The American?
January the 1st of 1955, I think.
And that story was...
It wasn't 55, it was 56.
Do you recall just briefly what that story was?
It was a story written about a person who appeared before one of the president's secretaries or some emissary of the White House connected with the president and asked for permission to talk to the president, and it was the president was brought into him and he disappeared after the conversation right there in the room. And
you mean the space person disappeared?
Yeah, the space person just flat
just vanished?
Just vanished.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the truth, Mr. Van Tassel?
This is, it is true that the president has had visitors.
No, didn't you say that that story was
that's
not
right
fiction, but the truth?
I
ask you...
What I meant by that was that the incident had occurred. Whether that particular story is a replica or written by someone who knew it or not,
now,
I don't know.
May I ask you how you know that is the truth?
Because I have a way of knowing things
true. Well, I assume you must have a way of knowing things. Would it be asking too much to tell us how you know it?
Yes, it would.
Oh.
Because it wouldn't make any difference.
The veil of silence invariably falls.
May I ask you this question, George?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't care to answer it, that's perfectly all right. Are you implying that this information that you have in reference to this alleged visit of a person from another planet to the President of the United States, did you get this information
telepathically?
You could say that, yes. Mm-hmm. That'd
Fine.
Be as close as you could say it.
All right.
Here's another point here where they quoted...
when you say they, we're talking about Civilian Saucer Intelligence Bulletin.
Yeah,
yes.
Civilian Saucer Intelligence Bulletin. Where they quoted from my first book I wrote of Flying Saucer a couple of the messages, which don't make any difference, except the information in them came true exactly as they said it would. And we have many witnesses of that, including the newspapers.
Is there anything inherently wrong with our quotation?
No, there's nothing wrong with the quotation,
Fine.
As far as
All
I
right.
can see.
Good.
But underneath that, you add, judging by this solemn claptrap,
this is our editorializing again.
Yes, the research section had hitherto set Van Tassel down as an honest but deluded soul, revering as super-earthly wisdom the inventions of his own subconscious. Now, here, without knowing me, without having ever met me, they are judging my subconscious.
This is not true. We had not met you. This is true. We had heard you over Long John's show, and we had seen you in person and heard you give forth with your comments at lectures.
It's
not based on nothing.
Mr. Van Tassel,
can I just put one word? I wanted to say, John, that I did have never shared CSI's opinion, if they hadn't said that you're a deluded soul. I think you're an intelligent man. I think you're very clever. I think you know just what you're doing.
That's exactly
just
right.
Just what you try
I
to
I certainly do, or I wouldn't be here doing
it. Continue, Judge.
The list goes on to tell about our flying trip and
Why
so
don't
forth.
You read the last sentence of that paragraph, Mr. Van Tassel?
Oh, I didn't know I left one off.
Yes. However, the gentleman's current activities have given us a different impression.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Therefore, we no longer think you're a deluded soul.
That's right. They go on down here further, article.
Let's stop right here.
Mm-hmm.
Did you discuss this possibly while I was coming down here? I think just as I was coming in, you were talking about this.
What was that?
I think you covered it tonight in your lecture. No, it was on the broadcast. You said that you don't solicit funds for this
That's right.
machine that you're building out.
Well,
it's not really a machine, is it?
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know, you don't turn away contributions, do you?
No. In fact, I make more
contributions
than
encourage
anybody
interest.
Else.
You do encourage interest in it through your lectures and through your book, don't you?
No, I didn't bring up the rejuvenation thing tonight in the lecture.
No, not tonight. You did. You did last
out.
Fall. You did last fall at Tiffany and Temple, and you did on Long John's show.
It was brought up in the question and answer period where somebody asked me about it.
Right. In other words, interest had been stimulated. They knew about it in order to ask about it.
Well, certainly there are
Fine.
People know about it, and they brought up the question.
Now, Mr. Van Tassel, I thought you had changed your opinion about soliciting funds. Now, you say it don't solicit funds. I'm going to quote directly from the proceedings, which appears in every issue, I believe, the same thing. Being most urgent that the research laboratory building be completed and the experimental unit put in operation at the earliest date possible, the trustees of the College of Universal Wisdom at Yucca Valley, California, earnestly solicit its patrons and friends to contribute generously to the building fund and to offer suggestions as to contacts that might be made with possible donors. You still say you don't solicit funds, Mr.
No,
Van Tassel?
No, I don't. That says the trustees solicit the funds.
Oh, in other words...
Didn't we hear before that the funds...
Now, don't let me answer the question. Just ask the question and butt in. Don't let me answer the question.
Let George answer that question, please. George?
It says the trustees earnestly solicit, and furthermore... it states that the fund is for what it is for. That the contributions are for the research in the building.
Aren't you one of the trustees, Mr. Van Tassel?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the trustees solicit, but
That's
you
right.
tell us that you do not solicit.
Could I interject?
Well, I do as
I would like to.
I'll drop this off.
No, I'd like to make one comment, Jules.
Let me comment here.
Go ahead, please do it.
This subject, it seems like Jules is so bound that I'm out to make money on this thing. I can show you my bank account on this organization where I contribute more to it than anybody else in it.
I'd be more interested in seeing the organization's bank account and the expenditures withdrawn and the money taken in.
Not that it's any of your business, but we donated $9,000 worth of property to start the thing.
You donated it to an organization whose bank account you control. It was the most generous gesture.
Yes,
May I ask about that donation? Was this donation part of your land at Giant Rock?
No, it's part of our land, our private ranch. It had nothing
your
to do with that.
Your private ranch. In other words, it didn't amount to money.
10 acres.
It didn't amount to any passing of money, but it was strictly land that was donated.
We donated 10 acres of land. It is legally recorded. I showed John the papers the night before last.
Right.
And it's recorded so that it cannot be sold by anybody, including me, under the constitutional law which prohibits the sale of any property that is so stated.
Just one question. It's really in the form of a statement, and if you desire to consider it a question, you may do so, Jules. Isn't it true, I mean in all fairness to George, isn't it true that if I, Long John, become a member of an organization that's incorporated as a non-profit organization, if I go out and suggest to the public in general that we need money to keep this organization going, does that necessarily mean that I am asking for contributions to me as an individual?
It depends. The basis of if it's a corporation with nothing more or less than a corporate entity of which you are the principal, I say in all common sense, John, you are seeking contributions for yourself. But here, Mr. Van Tassel has stated not only he is our recall, but at least let's give you the impression that he, as an agent or individually, was not soliciting money for the building unit or the, the building fund or the experimental unit. That was answered to Mr. Jensen's letter, I believe.
Could I say just a word here? I have a fairly clear recollection on how this thing started. And it's my recollection that the discussion started with the rejuvenation machine, and I believe it was Van's statement that he had not solicited any funds for the construction of the rejuvenation machine.
Yes,
What did you mean by centuries?
Well,
is it just a figure of speech?
No, John. In a matter of study and effort, in the quiet of the desert and in the process of following instructions from these people, I have the ability to know of several previous existences prior to this one.
Mm-hmm. Other incarnations?
Yes, you could call them that, although that name is definitely, that word is definitely misunderstood.
Mm-hmm. All right, it was just that I thought when I was out in the control booth, I heard some statement like that, and I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah, you were entirely right.
All right, fine.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry if I misnamed your machine, Mr. Van Tassel, the secondary machine. Tangible evidence to me would be one scientist connected with any reputable university who saw that lizard's head throw back underneath his eyes.
I might say that this man who had charge of this particular portion of the research is employed as a reputable scientist.
He's connected with you?
No, he's not connected with me. He works in another place.
I assume he's worked with you.
He works in industry.
So has he worked with you, sir?
No, he's never worked with me.
I mean, in conjunction with you? I don't mean
only on
employed.
That particular piece of apparatus.
No, I'm talking about somebody not connected with you in any way.
Well, I don't know of any scientist that knows what we're doing outside of him. He's the only one that worked on that is a legitimate electronics, or actually he works on what they call electronic brain. That's his particular type of work.
If I should write, sir, to the head of the science department of Stanford University, the University of California, would you show to them this lizard's head thrown back?
It would depend entirely upon who the individual was, whether I would show them anything or not.
I don't know who was the head of the science.
Well, I don't either. That's why I wouldn't agree to that statement, because I don't know who the head of the organization might be. He might belong to the subversive forces that are trying to take over this country, for all I know.
Well, can you...
I'm not just going to show it because they've got a title.
Well, whom would you suggest to this interested person? How about Long John? Do you show it to him? John, would you like to see a lizard's head grow back?
Well, I don't think I'd have much knowledge on the subject.
Well, you can see a lizard's head grow on
the
pictures. There's no point in trying to prove anything to you on the subject, because the minute that somebody said they had seen it and so forth, you would start tearing them apart just like you're tearing
me
apart.
No, I'll take John. Will you show
I'm
it to John?
I'm a qualified citizen. I say it. Isn't that sufficient?
No,
What is the difference between some other citizen?
Now, frankly, Mr. Van Tassel, I don't believe a word you're saying. I don't want to be impolite.
I don't care whether you do or not. I'm not here to impress you.
But, Mr., would you show it to Long John? You're not answering the question.
I was intended when John was out there, if I hadn't been so busy and he hadn't been so busy, I fully intended to show him the equipment.
I'm going to just say this in all fairness to George, although I didn't see the equipment. When I arrived out there on Thursday night, on Friday night, prior to the time of the convention, I had the opportunity of speaking with George Van Tassel. I talked to him for maybe about 5 or 10 minutes, and I tried to arrange to get an interview with him. And he said, John, it will be impossible during the next 2 days. If you're in town Monday after the convention, I'll be glad to do an interview on tape with you. And he offered. He did say to me this. He said, John, while you're here, I am going to show you the rejuvenating machine. You did not say the secondary machine. You used the term the rejuvenating machine. I said, can I see it operate? And I think he mentioned to me something about a period of 28 days, it seems that it takes this machine to start to function. In other words, I don't know if you press a button. This is just my idea that
your memory is very good, John.
It'll take 28 days before it starts to function.
Would that have something to do with the lunar period?
It does, exactly.
Very frankly, I did not have 28 days to spare. And to see the machine itself, I was interested in seeing it, but I didn't press the issue, and I didn't even ask George again, because by the time I got through fighting the rain, the wind, and the cold weather in this wonderful desert out there, I was too tired, and I didn't care if George Van Tassel had a rejuvenating machine or not.
John, can I put you in the spot a little
bit? You certainly may.
Well, I'm just going to ask you this question now.
Yes.
Do you believe that if he showed you this machine and you saw the lizard under it and he smashed its head, that you wouldn't have seen it throw back?
Well, let me say this. You're asking me a hypothetical question.
Would you have bought it if you did see it?
I don't know. I think I'm of a very suspicious nature. I have been around with magicians and pseudo-mind readers that... I don't know, and I don't mean to be unkind to my guest, George Van Tassel, tonight, but if the lizard was produced in its original form, I possibly would be amazed at the time, and as I was flying back on the plane, I'd start to say, now, wait a moment, didn't he give me a little misdirection? Isn't there a possibility that he palmed a live lizard and put it over there and switched to something? I'm being fair with you, George. I'm telling you.
That's what I say. A proof is something that...
You're also getting back to the original point that there is no such thing.
In other words, in answer to your question, I would not come back on the air and make the statement that I saw this operate.
This is answering the question that he claims that there would be no point in demonstrating this because no one would believe it even if they saw it.
I tried to tell you earlier in the program that the reason I object to showing this to anybody is because in the research we found that where the time phase is exceeded by the differential of these two fields, that disintegration results. Now, this in the hands of anybody is a deadly thing because matter can be annihilated. And we didn't do this purposely. It happened strictly by accident. And for that reason, this entire research was dropped owing to the detrimental factor that we encountered because, in fact, they didn't expect us to have this occur when they gave us the data on this particular apparatus.
Well, has this entire research been dropped entirely now, Mr. Van Tassel?
It hasn't been dropped, except that we've proven the point. All we used it for to begin with was to prove the point that we could establish these fields, and all we've got to do is clock them in relation to the Earth, and then we can apply this to humans or anything else.
And so I understand now, tell me if I'm wrong, that the secondary machine you described, which is used on the lizard, is entirely different and apart from the rejuvenation machine?
Definitely. And the one I mentioned showing to John, I was going to show him this when I showed him the photographs of, too, because I have complete confidence in him. And... the one that I referred to, I think if you remember right, I told you the rejuvenation machine, the large one, I could only show you in a toothpick model.
That's right.
And that's right. Made up out of toothpicks glued together because
There are so many forces involved in the operation of this particular function, and we're clocking against the Earth's rotation and its orbit. And in order to keep track of the directional forces involved in the function of this apparatus, you have to have a model to work with. You can't work on paper.
May I ask this, then? Do I understand correctly that the rejuvenation machine now is entirely theoretical? Is that right?
It's entirely theoretical. It hasn't been made yet.
That's right. John, going back to last fall, recollection must be better than mine. When Mr. Van Tassel was on, wasn't it your impression that there was a small rejuvenation machine in operation at that time? Was it difficult?
No, you misunderstood.
No, let John answer that question.
I will say this in trying to be as fair as possible, and I hope that my memory is serving me correctly this morning. I definitely feel that the statement was made on the program that there was a miniature rejuvenation machine that was made from plans that were given to George from somebody from another planet or from outer space or something. This machine was taken into some part of the desert, and in turn that there were two brain surgeons with him, and I don't remember whether he stated anybody else was with him or not at the time. And there was a lizard with a crushed head. Since then, George has mentioned that they crushed the head of this lizard in order to conduct this experiment. And this lizard was then placed in or on top or on the side or nearby the so-called rejuvenation machine. And in a matter of seconds, the head was restored back to its original shape and form, and it jumped away into the rocks or something like that. Now, that is the way I remember it, but I must admit that in doing this show six nights a week, I could be mistaken.
Well, my recollection is the same as you, except for one thing. I do not recall Mr. Van Tassel mentioning the two brain surgeons in connection with the lizard.
No, that's true.
I think that he mentioned it in connection with
the lizard. Here's the thing that I think possibly has John confused, is the fact that at that time I may not have specified so definitely between these two pieces of apparatus.
That's quite true.
I don't think I made such a statement.
In the secondary machine? That's not a point of argument.
Except that I had thought that Mr. Van Tassel had claimed that he had one, a miniature one, an actual operation, a rejuvenation machine.
If anything, you could call it a regeneration.
Was going around last fall.
Right. Well, you may have heard the story along the
third hand.
Stories go around like this stuff here to the extent that you believe what you read or hear. It gets mixed in your mind with a thousand other things.
I have a suggestion, and I sincerely hope that you will agree with my suggestion. We have only a very short period of time left. And if you don't agree, you can just say so. We have two gentlemen here, one George Van Tassel and one Jules St. Germain. Both of them have different opinions about each other. This is quite obvious if you've been listening to the program. 5:10:15. I would say that if we started exactly, which will be a minute from now, 5:10, and if we carry on for 5:25, that would be a period of 15 minutes. I would like to divide that into two sections. I would like to have Mr. Van Tassel have the opportunity of taking 7.5 minutes, and I would like Jules St. Germain to have the opportunity of taking 7.5 minutes. Of recapping your opinions, your statements, or anything you want to say. Are you agreeable to that?
Certainly.
Now, in order to decide who is going to talk first, I have a coin here. Would you please, Dan, will you flip the coin? What did you take, heads or tails?
Heads.
Heads. All right. Well, I think you've lost.
That's right.
So yep. You start.
No, I think he gets the choice.
Oh, the choice? All right. Either way,
it's fantastic, Your Honor.
You want me to go first? Okay.
You go.
I have nothing whatsoever to say about Jules or what he professes or the analysis he makes of our proceedings or our research. It doesn't mean a thing to me what he thinks or what he says about it. He's entitled to his opinion, and he certainly expresses it. And we are going ahead with our research. We're going ahead with our purpose exactly as we have. We don't intend to be interfered with if we can help it, and we have nothing to hide. At any time, I do everything possible within the basic structure of our laws, and if I do anything different, it's because I didn't know the law. We are registered with the state as a business organization. We pay taxes to the county. We get building permits when we build buildings. Certainly, if I had anything to hide, I wouldn't be running a bank account, because that is an open record to both other people in the bank and the canceled checks that go back to the people that wrote them and so forth. That's the last thing you would have if you were trying to do something crooked, is have a bank account. As I said before, the principles involved in which we are working with are prior to atomic energy. They are the energies from which atoms are born and from which planets and solar systems and galaxies function. And we have printed some of these pictures in the big book of proceedings and in our issues that come out monthly. Now, I have nothing to convert anybody to. I don't care if anybody ever believes in flying saucers. I know that nobody on this earth at any time here or hereafter will ever change my mind about the fact that I saw and went aboard a flying saucer. I am a realist of the first water, and what occurs to me is my experience, and nobody can take it away from me. These things, just because Lindbergh flew the Atlantic, that don't mean everybody flew it, and those who read in the papers that he flew it certainly should doubt it if they are like Jules, that the man ever flew the Atlantic, because they didn't fly it, and he didn't furnish proof to anybody that he did fly it. These particular things are always subject to controversy. Now, in operating a public airport, my wife and my daughters and myself live in a goldfish bowl from morning to night, as Dan can tell you, or as John can tell you when he was out there. In fact, the night of the convention, I had to sleep in a friend's trailer who towed it down from Oregon, because we'd even given our bed to somebody else. Our goldfish existence out there naturally is subject to criticism. I could find plenty of fault with anybody if I had the privilege of investigating their daily life in their own home. We live outdoors practically, except we sleep inside during bad weather, and we live next to nature, and we try to follow natural laws. We, as anybody out there that has ever been to the Rock can tell you, they'll testify that we don't charge them for camping. We don't make charges every time somebody turns around. They get free water at all times. There's no charge for the use of the toilet facilities or anything on the property. The only time anybody pays for anything out there is if they buy a sandwich or if they get a cup of coffee or something where they get something in return. They pay a very nominal price for it. We are not trying to make money. We long ago lost interest in making money or having an excess of money. My wife and three daughters are all married. My three daughters are married, and we have three grandchildren and another one coming in August. We are open at all times to anybody on the East Coast here who cares to come out there and stay on the place. It won't cost you a cent. Stay on the place. Investigate as long as you like. Investigate my wife, my daughters, myself, the bank account, anything you wish to investigate. But don't sit back here and make decisions without knowing what you're making decisions about, like some of these telegrams have done. I invite you out to investigate. That's all I can do. I'm not going to show you in research that, to my knowledge, if I had known what it would do, I never would have discussed it at any time. Unfortunately, I discussed this particular piece of apparatus prior to the time we found out about the disintegrating force of it. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't care if it ever operates again, because I happen to know what it'll do. I know that when there is nothing but a few particles of skin of a whole lizard left, that it's pretty annihilating force. And since it is possible to exceed the differential of this phasing, I'm
certainly not going to monkey with it on the chance that I might eliminate myself. And I've got a lot of things I want to do around here. And now that I'm a grandfather and free of caring for my children who are married, I certainly intend to devote the rest of my life to the progression of humanity and any of the advanced things that we can develop. As I said in the proceedings several times, are going to be presented freely to humanity for their own benefit. We have no ulterior motive. We do require money to operate on because we are operating under a money system. Fortunately, we don't have to beg. I spent 20 years in the air game, and I had the intelligence to look forward to a rainy day. And we don't have to beg from people, and we don't have to take their lip.
You have a minute left, Mr. Van Dyke.
Well, all I can say is that I want to thank WOR, the station, the owners, the sponsors, and Long John, all of the many friends we have made here in New York, and all of the experiences we have had that we treasure. I want to thank all of the people for the many things they've done for us, both on this trip and the last one. I don't know when I'll be back again, but I certainly will look up Long John if I come back.
Well, thank you very much. Do you want to take over Jules?
Yes,
Jules St. Germain, the attorney from Lynbrook, Long Island.
I'd like to say, first of all, that my remarks tonight are not intended to discredit in any way any serious study of ufology. What I do object to is those individuals who will enter the field and attempt to make money under false pretenses at the expense of gullible individuals. Mr. Van Tassel is a man who is very personable. I have nothing against him personally, but I have the most extreme abhorrence in what he is doing and what he has been doing. And I think that his primary purpose is to make a dollar and a big dollar. What he said tonight about a $15,000 donation, about having 10,000 letters, convinces me that the potentials of getting suckers is very, very great, and he's well on his way. I only hope that I can stop him in the few minutes I've been have to speak. Now, Mr. Van Tassel, on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, spoke about the HO letters. Briefly, I want to state that indeed was a temporary deception which I voluntarily brought to light myself. That is very far removed from the type of hoax that Mr. Van Tassel has been perpetrating. He has compared my message to Hitler. I'd rather compare Mr. Van Tassel's message to Hitler and compare him with mine. Hitler used the big lie as one of his basic methods of propaganda. By deluding people, he achieved his ends. That is not my purpose. Mr. Van Tassel's record will bear out whether he's akin to Mr. Hitler in that respect. Hitler wanted power. He wanted a great deal of power. He wanted followers. Mr. Van Tassel is a candidate for president. I think Mr. Van Tassel wants power. I don't want power. I want to bring the truth to light. Hitler tried to pit one class against another through economic appeal, various appeal. Mr. Van Tassel has been ranting against the military. He's been talking about the 30-hour week. He's been railing against our economy. Those are characteristics of Hitler's tactics, not of mine. I will let the listener judge if the methods used by Mr. Van Tassel or myself are akin to that of Hitler. Tonight has been very, very revealing for me. I've heard Mr. Van Tassel make the most ludicrous statements. Any intelligent listener, listen to him try to explain angels and angels, and even tell us that the Bible was interpreted by symbols rather than by words, can draw their own conclusion as to that. Those people who want to believe, the intelligence-based people, are educating our young ones through comic book
can believe that if they wish to. It seemed to me that there could be a much more direct method if you were in contact with any space people. Pardon me. You may believe, Mr. Van Tassel, that there are Darrows, people from the bowels of the earth, with fire and brimstone to punish those. I suppose that includes myself. I personally have the greatest doubt. You may believe, Mr. Van Tassel, that Nikola Tesla is still alive and confined somewhere. I have my doubts about that. The sad part of this is that some people have such a strong will to believe that it will completely destroy their common sense. When I appeared in the first program, I thought of this as a matter of fun. Now I've taken it a lot more seriously. I received letters from people that were pitiful in their belief. Letters that, when some light was brought to them, were pitiful in the disillusionment. Things such as what we remarked before about this vaccine and Mr. Van Tassel's absolutely horrifying statement of that it would lead to mental illness and similar diseases are such that, in my opinion, border upon, well, I don't know the word to describe it, I'm on the air, but are most reprehensible and should and will be brought to the attention of the proper authorities. Unfortunately, Mr. Van Tassel has injected, not on the air very much, but through his literature, the element of religion. I ask any person who is sincerely and devoutly religious to read his proceedings at the College of Universal Knowledge and see if religion is being thwarted, is being used, rather, for a purpose which is aimed to benefit Mr. Van Tassel. I am also very fearful of the effect of his works on children. I recall John saying that at the spacecraft convention, there were a great number of children there. Children's minds are impressionable. It can do great harm to them. To those persons who border on the neurotic, I'm afraid that belief in this nonsense can really have a devastating effect. I've received telephone calls from people. I'd say a person who told you it was so important that we keep the Darrows down. Now, this may be funny, but what sort of nonsense is this? What effect can it have on a fairly normal mind? The effect can be very, very injurious. Now, I do not think, because Mr. Van Tassel is an American citizen, that he's immune to criticism. I don't think I'm immune to criticism either. I think he has taken a position which is detrimental to the public welfare. And I congratulate John on his bringing to the public both sides of the subject. I'm just going to say...
You have 1 minute.
I'm not going to take a minute. I'm going to ask every intelligent listener to draw his own conclusion as to who's telling the truth and pass judgment.
Now, would you like to have 60 seconds? That's all I can afford to give you, Dan. And then I'm going to give 60 seconds to Mark.
Well, I haven't really had much to say tonight. There's been a controversy here that hasn't been connected with me in any way. We started out this program to get...